Hello, this is Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, and I am here with non-birding Bill.
Hello.
And it is our goal to podcast.
How are we doing on that?
Apparently poorly. Mm-hmm. So I would like to dedicate this podcast to Franklin Clemens.
All right.
Who, because we released a podcast, was it this week or last week? Because I know we recorded it, and then all of a sudden I got a notification, I think this week, that, you know, it went up. And I was like, oh, did that
Yeah, well,
up?
The problem is I'm not your webmaster anymore, mm-hmm. so I have to wait for you to put the thing up, and then I have to go into your blog, and it would be so much easier for me just to send this to you.
Why don't you do that?
Because you told me you don't know how to do that. And
well,
it'd be
why don't you show me how to do that?
Yeah,
see, that was one of the reasons why I didn't want you to be my webmaster anymore, because I'd be like, how do I do this? And then you would just go do it, and I was like,
sure,
but I don't know what's going on. Yeah. I want to be in control. I want to be in control of everything.
Well, then maybe you should record the podcast on your computer.
But you have more space in your computer. Do you know how much... I blame that stupid Digiscoping workshop because I was going to do a funny voice, but I respect these people too much. But there were some, you know, serious... I shouldn't say serious. There were some Digiscopers there who liked to shoot.
You're just digging the hole deeper.
I don't want to...
As you try to save yourself, just continue to dig the hole deep. I don't want to call them troglodytes, but basically they were subhumans.
I don't want to call them troglodytes. They Digiscope very differently than I do.
Sure.
And I mean, they're very artistic and gorgeous photos.
Sure.
And they're like, oh, you should be doing this in RAW if you do this in RAW. But also RAW rather than JPEG means a whole lot more... space on your computer.
Oh yeah, no, it takes a lot more space.
And you know, it's like, I just want to share stuff on Instagram, mm-hmm. man. And if sometimes my stuff gets published, which it does, I actually I'm really excited. I haven't seen the printed version yet, but I got a request before Bird Fair from I think it's Bird Watch magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, what's the magazine that's in my lap? Bird Watching. They were going to do a Digiscoping supplement, and they asked if I had any pictures. And I was like, yeah, do you want iPhone or do you want regular? And they said, oh, we don't think iPhone is going to work. So, for print quality.
Wrong.
So, I just sent a Flickr album to them, mm-hmm. and I was like, you know, here's like, I think I sent 16 photos for them to choose from. An equal
sure.
mix of SLR, Digiscope pictures,
sure.
and iPhone. They chose 4 photos to use.
Mm-hmm.
2 of which were iPhone photos.
Right.
I was like, yes!
Well, I mean, RAW made sense back, you know, back in the day, because RAW means it's an uncompressed photo. But, I mean, I think we're sufficiently advanced enough now. I mean, and you've done this before where
I can
you
see
said...
a different, like, okay, so
where
pictures...
you've said, here's an SLR photo and here's an iPhone photo, and people consistently cannot pick
the right
one.
Well, now I've done that program so much, they just pick... They know. They're like, I'm going to pick the nicer photo. I'm like, yes, that is the iPhone Digiscope photo. I do notice a difference with white birds. Like,
sure.
if I'm working with egrets, then there's an advantage to RAW.
Mm-hmm.
But for the type of stuff that I do, I just... I don't want to spend that much time in editing.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're amazing cameras, so...
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm kind of torn because right now...
So the point you were complaining about, that you shot a bunch of stuff in RAW? Is that why it's taking up so much space?
Yes, and that's why I can't
just
record the podcast.
Well, upload them to Flickr and then delete them.
I have, but I need a backup besides Flickr. What if something goes wrong? What if someone hacks into Flickr like Ashley and Madison and deletes all my stuff?
I can't even unpack that, because the problem with Ashley Madison was not that they were deleting stuff, it was that they were making it public.
I have some embarrassing photos that could be made. But I don't feel bad.
You won't believe that Sharon Steitler took this photo of a great egret. Oh my god, embarrassment.
Actually, what I'm terrified is like if someone got into our chat history and what we send to each other.
All right, that's enough of that conversation.
It would be the most embarrassing marriage ever.
That's enough of that there. Thank you very much.
Anyway, my original thing was I wanted to dedicate this podcast to Frank Clemens because he said, what?
R.I.P.
5 weeks since the last podcast and you only went a half an hour? How did NBB bribe you to accomplish that? And then there's the smiley face.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
So we know that it's a friendly message. But anyway, so Frank, this podcast, this is dedicated to you.
All right, that's our podcast.
I'm going to drag this puppy out. I'm going to make non-birding Bill suffer.
All right, that's the end of the episode. If you have any questions for Sharon, you can talk to her. She is at birdchick on Twitter.
Franklin, this is all you, baby. This is all you.
Well, in the interest of not doing that, let's move on. Do we have actual stories to talk about?
I thought you wanted to talk about a magazine you found in the bathroom.
Which one?
Well, I keep People Magazine and my birding magazines in the bathroom.
Sure. Right. Oh, you want me to read this?
This is what you did earlier today. I want everybody to get the full-on birding bill.
No, there's a headline on the Birdwatching Magazine. Is this October 2015? The headline is by Scott Weidenthal, who is a friend of yours, I believe.
He knows me. I don't know if I would call him a friend. Okay. He's nice to me.
Sure.
I think he's really hot. He would be on my birder list of five. No offense to Scott Weidenthal's wife.
The headline is Misunderstood Snowy Owl.
Yes.
Which sounds like a romance title from the 1960s.
Basically, Scott is one of the people behind Project Snowstorm, which we've talked about a number of times on this podcast. Yes. And so he has an article about it in Birdwatching Magazine, which used to be Birders World. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I'm just going to fess up something here, and I'm probably going to like piss off some editors that I know. I kind of have stopped reading birding magazines for a few years.
Sure.
And I just have recently got back into actually kind of looking at them and reading them. And I think for a while I quit reading them because either the articles were I don't want to say things I could have written, but there were a lot of basic articles in there. And then magazines that would have articles that I hadn't read before, it was about stuff I just didn't give a rat's ass about. Like, I don't care about flycatcher ID. Right. I don't care about some seabird I'm never going to see. And that's just me and the way I enjoy birding. I don't want to misrepresent other birders. But it's like, I just need a break from all the birding magazines. And so I've recently started, you know, reading.
Well, I think you're at the level where, like, the articles you would enjoy reading, you could never make a magazine survive by printing those articles.
I know. I want to read about fun stuff. I don't want to read just, oh, I went to this rare country, and here is this account of all the rare species.
Sure. Well, you read these, and what I enjoy when I read these is, you know, amazing photos of birds, and it's also travel stuff. It's like you can go here and see these birds.
But sometimes the you can go here and see these birds just kind of becomes like an elongated list.
Mm.
But, no, I was, so bird watching, which used to be Birders World, which I always called the kind of playboy of the birding magazines. We said we were reading the articles, but really, we were looking at the photos. And it's still
No, I'm getting stereo advice.
It's still really that today, because I'm going through here. Birders World, I will say, has the best bird photography in it. I mean, I'm looking at some of this stuff, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm getting wet looking at it. But, I mean, look at this, Vesper Sparrow. But no, I was just kind of thumbing through it in the bathroom the other day, and they do the kind of the People Magazine thing, just kind of like the little snippets about, oh, hey, you know what, there's a breeding record for solid.
Who wore it best? Tawny egret or green egret?
But there is something in here that I'm also off dinosaur stories, because I feel like every week I open up my Google News feed, and it's like, hey, there's a new dinosaur discovery that shows that birds and dinosaurs are kind of related, blah, blah. It's like, okay, that's great. How many different times can you find a different dinosaur that says that? I understand that that's exciting to someone out there who's into dinosaurs.
But you hate dinosaurs. I mean,
don't
let's
hate
be
dinosaurs.
Honest.
I just was like, I get it. That's evolution.
Your email address is dinosaurhater37 at hotmail.com because there were 36 other people who hated dinosaurs more than you.
But no, there's a picture in here that, you know, because apparently we have not only found a dinosaur with feather remnants, but also like even some color pigments. So we know what it looks like. So it looks like this really terrifying cross between a velociraptor
and a peacock.
A sun bittern and a green kingfisher.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing I'm wondering, because I see teeth. How did dinosaurs, if they had feathers and teeth, maintain those feathers? Because birds have beaks, and those beaks are specialized to help preen. How the heck did they do that with?
Well, that's how you know the Earth is only 2,000 years old. I mean,
4,000.
Oh, whatever. The Earth is only 2 years old.
Noah saw those feathered dinosaurs and said, no way, Jose, you're not going to my ark.
No idea. I mean, you're looking at an artist representation who is... Yeah, I know.
And I'm not doubting that certain species of dinosaurs had feathers, but I just looked at this and I'm like, wow, those feathers are all in perfect condition for a dinosaur that appears to be running through thick vegetation. And it has teeth. How could you preen with teeth? I'm dubious of being able to preen with teeth. I brought this up last night at a bird gathering. And somebody suggested that maybe it was like cat tongues. Maybe they lick themselves like cats and that's how
maybe.
They... But then I would think feathers, because like human oil on feathers too much can destroy birds' feather structure.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, if someone has an answer to me about how dinosaurs, like a velociraptor-esque type dinosaur with teeth, could maintain their feathers or preen, I'd be interested.
Well, they probably went to the vet. Got a good brushing.
Maybe their feathers were just really awful all the
time. Maybe there was another dinosaur that just existed to keep them clean.
Oh, maybe it was like a parasitic thing.
Yeah, there you go.
Parasitic dinosaurs mm-hmm. and their hosts.
Exactly.
Well, and, you know...
Dinosaur that had a salon.
They may not have flown. I mean, their feathers may have been for insulation or mating. But still, if you're going to do that, you would have to keep them in some kind of order. You would need to preen. You would need some way to... I certainly do. Yeah, you would need some way to maintain them. So that's just something that's occurring to me and one of the reasons why I'm uncomfortable reading dinosaurs.
So we haven't actually gotten to the article that we were setting out to talk about, is how is the snowy owl misunderstood? You don't know him. He's really shy. He can change. He treats me really nice when people aren't around.
Or she.
Whatever.
There's so no how gender.
So how is the snowy owl misunderstood?
It's mostly about the whole movement thing, you know, when they... I actually haven't read that particular article yet because it's longer than the other articles. But
God. I can't stand these magazines. It's all just pictures. Oh, I didn't read this article that explains some scientific thing.
I didn't stand the article. No, I just started reading this. There was a really good People magazine, and I had to read about... I had to read about, you know...
You had to do the 10 things that were different between the two photos, something that was in Highlights magazine when I was a child.
I couldn't help myself. It was a One Direction.
They broke up. Did you hear about that?
They didn't break up. They're going on hiatus.
They broke up.
No. They're going to pursue other projects in 2016. I don't even know why I care. I don't even know if I could identify a One Direction song.
Oh, you got to be careful. One Direction fans are insane.
You know what? I'm in birding. Nobody into One Direction knows who I am on Twitter. Although I am a little nervous. So sure. I was at it was not a Birds and Beers gathering on the off chance anyone is listening to this and being like, why wasn't I invited to this? A birder had a party last night at their place. And so I just went there when I finished work.
Sure. It's the first time a birder's ever had a party.
I know. Right? It's crazy. So, we're watching birds, and then the moon comes up, and it's huge, and it's red. And I think in Minnesota, we're seeing this kind of red moon, because we don't have wildfires necessarily here, but nearby, there's smoke, there's haze.
They're all over the place, yeah.
This moon was red. Sure. And so I was digiscoping it, and I was tagging it Blood Moon, because I was just being me.
Mm-hmm.
And I got followed by someone on Twitter called The Happy Feminist, who has quite a few followers. And I'm just like... I don't really think I'm the person you want to follow. Because you and I have take the feminist test. You're a better feminist than I am. I am problematic at best.
That's my ghost account that you don't know about.
So I'm kind of... Do you know your ghost account has like over 46,000 followers?
Amazing.
As the happy feminist?
No. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe the happy feminist will like me as opposed to some of the other feminists who don't like me.
All right. What other... So the snowy owl is misunderstood.
It's mostly misunderstood because we thought because
your friends won't give it a chance. And, like, you just don't know him like I know him.
You know, I was going to make another comment, but that would make me a bad feminist.
You're a terrible feminist. All right, let's move on to our next...
The reason why the snowy owl is misunderstood is because we think that when they come down into North America in large numbers, that they're starving to death and not living. And they're finding quite the opposite with Project Snowstorm, that they have erratic and eruptive movements... But this is just par for the course, and they don't necessarily go to the same place every year.
Science.
I would recommend reading Project Snowstorm. Actually, I would recommend having a subscription to Birdwatching Magazine.
You can't cover it. It's too late. You can't backtrack that.
No. My thing was that I hadn't read it for a long time, and I started reading it again, and I was like, I forgot how much I enjoyed this magazine. I was going to say this is probably one of the best birding magazines I've read for a while, this particular issue. Well, no, I read the other issue, too. But then I was like, but I don't write for this magazine. I write for other magazines. I should probably tell you the magazines I write for, the best ones. You should read those ABA publications. You should read National Audubon. They're fantastic.
You remember when I told you should, like, stop two sentences before you think you should? This is one of those times.
Actually, now I'm questioning my writing. It's like, maybe I'm writing poorly. Maybe I should start reading this and writing this way. My life is a lie.
Yeah. On that note, do we have other stories to talk about, or are we just going to sit here in silence while you...
No, we do, while I question myself.
Pry into your whiskey.
So somebody has an article up at... it's at Nature. And Kara Byington had an article that popped up that said Ode to Merlin. And if you don't know what Merlin is...
He's a wizard. He trained King Arthur.
He
had a long white beard and a conical hat that had stars and moons on it.
Are we sure that it had stars and moons? Was that actually in the book?
Obviously. Oh, yeah.
I don't remember reading
this. No, it just did. Everybody knows this. So what's Merlin up to these days?
Dude, you just like jumped right past. You went straight from the pointy hat to Merlin.
That's what we were talking about.
Oh, okay, sorry. I paused to get a drink. Keep it. Don't change it.
I'm not changing it. I'm trying to give a treat to our rabbit.
Okay.
Which is not a metaphor.
So the story that I think we were talking about is Ode to Merlin and this woman named Cara Byington.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
that's I'm glad familiar. That I'm owning something that I've already said, because sometimes I listen to Stuff Mom Never Told You, mm-hmm. and it's very obvious that a cut happened, and then they redid it, and so you'll get kind of a re-explanation in the middle of it. We're just owning it, so we're just doing this. Okay, so it starts off, and it says, "You should use a real field guide," said the angry-sounding man next to me in the bird blind at Jug Bay Wetland Sanctuary.
Actually, as opposed to the imaginary kind.
"You should use a real field guide."
Sure.
And she said, "I glanced up from my phone where Merlin, Cornell Lab of Ornithology's bird identification app, was helping me determine if the bird I'd been observing was a greater or lesser yellowlegs."
Mm-hmm.
The man jerked his chin at my phone. "I'm so tired of seeing people supposedly out here birding staring at their phones. That's not how you bird." And then he walked away, shaking his head. And then...
From the blind? What a jerk.
I know, yeah. Like, he totally could have been flushing things. Mm. But the rest of the thing is her trying to justify using... the Merlin app.
Right.
And you just saw me raise my eyes because I looked at a photo that I'm pretty sure is misidentified in this article. But that's regardless of the thing. We're not going to talk about how that beak that long is really a hairy woodpecker's, not a downy. But anyway, I digress. It struck a chord with me for several reasons. Because, number one, I've never been a fan of bird watchers telling everyone how there is only one way to bird.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of different ways.
No, it's nonsense.
It's nonsense. Now, if you want to be a lister and you want to mm-hmm. be taken seriously with a particular organization, you pick that organization. Right. So you can either have your own personal list and just keep that to yourself, or if you want to go by a competitive route, then you go by the mm-hmm. ABA guidelines that excludes Hawaii and for North America, and you do that.
Well, I've said, you know, having been traveling around with you and having met, you know, like some really like high-level bird watchers and stuff, I have never met a high-level bird watcher who, A, takes a bird guide out into the field with them in book form,
mm-hmm.
Or B, berate someone for how they go birding. So this guy's just a jerk. Let's say asshole. That's the word I was gonna, but we've already talked about that. So, but it's like carrying a book around with you, it's impractical. They're heavy, especially with all the color ink. They're just heavy to carry around. The only time like people who have, they have them in their car or they have them at their home.
Yes.
For like their house bird feeding.
I do have to pause you here for just a second because the person that wrote this article was like saying, "I wanted to justify that I was a real birder because I had 15 pounds worth of field guides in my backpack." And I was like, "Oh, sweetie, you don't take your field, especially don't take 15 pounds worth of field guides out with you."
The Merlin app is, you know, it's a very useful tool for like identifying things. But like, if you've got something like, you know, the other apps, it's the same information.
Mm-hmm.
It's just searchable.
Yeah. And so I would argue, because I try not to use my phone in the field unless I am taking pictures. But sometimes after the bird goes away, it's like, you know, I just want to do a comparison of these two warbler tails.
And I know that I would, you know, granted, I'm not a bird watcher, but if somebody said this to me, I would give him a piece of my mind, to put it politely.
Oh, I would.
Fuck out of my face, you old fart. Don't tell me what the fuck to do.
We don't know if this person
get out of this
old.
Blind before I put your foot up your ass and kick you out.
But I've been kind of thinking about this, and it's one of the things that I try to do in my job at the Park Service is, like, you know, people are like, "Oh, it's so terrible. Kids aren't going out in the woods anymore, and all they want to do is technology." I was like, did it ever occur to you to use that technology to get those kids outside?
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing. You know, we're the TV generation. Everybody is going to experience life differently. Kids are growing up. Okay, you and I grew up without the internet.
Yep.
And it's come into our lives, and it's been a wonderful thing. And now there are kids that are growing up with the internet in their lives, and I don't think this is a bad thing. I love living in an age where today I saw a picture of something that looked like a red penis. I shouldn't see a picture. I saw something on
you
my...
You saw a red penis?
I saw red penises growing out of the ground today. And I took a picture. I came home and I typed into Google, fungus that looks like penis. And what I saw came up today.
That explains all the spam that's been showing up in our filter.
There's also a really fun mushroom joke, which I may or may not put in the podcast link.
No, I mean, it's... And you've pointed this out many times before. It's that kids who are going birdwatching today are not joining organized groups in person. They have online groups. Like, I've recently started using Tumblr again, and like my weird interests, which are like fountain pens and 80s, you know, cult movies, there are tons of people out there collecting those things. And I'm not necessarily, you know, I'm following their blogs and things like that, or their Tumblrs, I'm sorry. But I'm not, you know, we're not organizing and sending, you know, letters back and forth. So
to go along with this, and I've been kind of thinking about writing an article along those lines. So there's a blog called Bourbon Bastards and Birds run by Siegel Steve.
Good name.
It's a good blog, you know, if you still follow blogs. And they had an article recently that talked about the Human Birdwatcher Project, the democratization of birding.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something, if you have been on any kind of Facebook group or Tumblr, I was going to try and do this to try and keep the person anonymous, but I don't think I can. I'm going to stop it. So, like, somebody posts a picture of a bird. They either don't know what it is or they misidentify it. People who actually know what the bird is, have experience with that bird, will say, no, this is the reason why it's it. And then everyone else are like, this is a pretty picture. Oh, you're mean. And blah, 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 blah. And it's like, no, this is really what the bird is. And so experts are like, no, you're being kind of thick-headed here. This really is this particular species. But because the overwhelming majority says, no, we think this is it, even though they're wrong. So it's this whole thing about how there's birding by votes and likes on Facebook.
Sure.
And so when this article came out, I was like, that's kind of mean. That doesn't happen all that often. Right here in Minnesota birding, we had a case pop up where someone had some pictures at their bird feeder. And it was a very distinctive bird feeder. And they had these pictures show up of what were clearly to me immature rose-breasted grosbeaks, and they're like, hey, these are young black-headed grosbeaks. And it's like, I can see why you would think they were, but here's the thing, rose-breasteds are far more common. And Greg Neese from the American Birding Association was pointing out the subtle differences, so I didn't need to do it. And then someone like said, hey, a retired DNR, Department of Natural Resources employee, says that this is a black-headed grosbeak. No explanation as to why it was, whereas Greg Neeks was talking about nape color, chin color, and all this stuff. And it was like, oh, I think this is a black-headed grosbeak. And then someone else said, yeah, this doesn't look right for rose-breasted grosbeak to me, especially this one on the left. I have no experience with black-headed grosbeak. And so for me, it was driving me kind of nuts, because it's like, I don't have huge amounts of experience, but I have experience seeing black-headed grosbeak, and it's like just living in Minnesota knowing that rose-breasted is so common. And my absolute favorite thing was, I think Greg was one who posted, you know, the Picard facepalm, and I was like, this is the Siegel Steve article coming alive. Yeah. Everyone's like, yeah, this is a black-headed grosbeak. And it just kind of became a running joke. Well, then, like, a few days later, a picture pops up of the exact same feeder. And this is a very distinctive, cutesy feeder. Mm-hmm. And the thing that comes up is like, hey, the black-headed grosbeak family has been around all week. And all of us who have experience with black-headed grosbeaks, we're just like, this is not a black-headed grosbeak! This is not a black-headed grosbeak! These are rose-breasted. And the person left a note saying, thank you for the wonderful comments, not, I'm leaving birding and I'm never coming back again. And it's like, oh, and come to find out, it was the wife of the person posting it who had apparently missed the whole thread about why these weren't black-headed grosbeaks. And I kind of want to write an article now that says, this is why birders are mean to you. And they're not mean to you, but it's like you're just like blatantly ignoring people who have experience with a bird. And then I started thinking
I think you need a hash like mean girls, you need mean birders.
Mean birders. Yeah. Oh, maybe we do.
Mean birds.
Mean birds. Well, and I thought back, so when I first started becoming, I don't want to say a bird personality, but when I first moved to Minnesota and really decided that, you know, I want to be a writer about birds and I want to do stuff and I want to do birding my own way and I want to get other people excited about birds, I would hear people complain about experienced birders, some of whom were justifiably crusty and known for their crustiness to this day. And I was like, no, we don't need to be like this guy. No, birding's for everyone. You can do whatever you want. And it's like, oh my God, these crusty birders make so much sense. No wonder. I mean, here we just had someone blatantly say, I have no experience with black-headed grosbeak, even though you do, but I mean, I still disagree that this is not a black-headed grosbeak.
That's the key difference, because I specifically remember, and I don't know why this sticks in my head, this one story of you were talking to, like, you had been out birding and you just ran across two birders and said that you had seen something, and they completely discounted what you had seen and told you it was something else, having not seen the bird at all, just because you were young and they were old. But what you guys were doing was explaining, like, you know, based on your experience, X, Y, and Z, and the people were discounting. I assume this was a rarer bird that they were trying.
Two distinctive moments where I know this has happened to me.
But I mean, like, well, yeah. Before you do that, but like, I assume that whatever bird they said it was rarer or more exciting in some way.
No, what they just flat out didn't believe me. Yeah. And so I got
normally, like, when this situation has come up before, it's somebody who thinks they've seen a rarer bird.
Okay. You're talking about someone who's seen a rare bird. Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, so I know that you happened.
I pick my battles now.
But this is, you, like, explaining to people why this is and them saying, no, that's not it. This is just whatever bird I want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, because I come across it daily where someone will tell me about their golden eagles in the Twin Cities killing a squirrel in their backyard, and it's July, and it's like, it's not a golden eagle.
No, it's a,
And I pick my battles. It depends on where I am, how much time I have, and if I care. And, and so sometimes, like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of bald eagles in the Twin Cities, and I try not to be a dick about it. I try to be as nice as I can. Because, I mean, I will admit, I know that someone who was a higher up in me in the Park Service once was telling me about how they had these great photos of a Cooper's Hawk using their bird bath, or no, a Peregrine Falcon using their bird bath. I was like, oh, I'd really like to see that. That's pretty cool. And brought it in. I was like, yeah, that's a Cooper's Hawk. No, that's a Peregrine Falcon. Oh, shit, I need to tell the opposite of this
story. Yes, exactly. That's what I was about to bring up. So it happens.
You tell the opposite story. So, oh, shit. Yeah. This is like a first.
We have a friend who has a very nice piece of property in Minneapolis.
Who actually just lived a couple blocks from our old place.
Yeah, exactly. Lovely, you know, lovely, lovely place. And because they have this wonderful, gorgeous backyard, they started bird feeding. And they told
They started keeping chickens.
Started keeping chickens, I'm sorry. And they told you, what was it, that they had a peregrine falcon
perched on a wire in their back, just hanging out.
You need to tell this because that's the only part of the story that I know, and I will.
So on Facebook, it's like, yeah, we have this peregrine falcon hanging out on our wire, and it's like, it's a Cooper's Hawk. We live in the same neighborhood.
Right.
It is a Cooper's Hawk that's perched on that wire. And I thought, when I was typing that, I was like, there's like a 10% chance it's a red falcon, but there's no fucking way it's a peregrine falcon.
And then she got a photo of it.
Well, no. So she was like, no, Sharon, I kind of know birds because my dad was a wood carver. And we've seen the wood carvings that her dad did. They are exquisite.
And they have like,
they have a nice, and they have some bird coffee table books. I'm like, that's great, but you're not having a peregrine in uptown Minneapolis sitting on a wire. It's like, no, this is what I have.
And doodly,
I was like,
doodly, doodly.
So I said, pics, or it didn't happen, which is what you say on the internet. Then her husband posts a pic.
And my God, it was a peregrine falcon sitting on a wire in uptown.
It was an adult peregrine falcon. It wasn't even like an immature peregrine falcon. It was like, hey, I'm in uptown. I'm going to perch on the wire. And I'm like, God damn it. And I'm like, well, that's it. And now Kate, justifiably, when we go over to parties, it's like, identified. And it says it at parties. I'm like, yeah, you're totally justified in doing that. But I like sent the picture to some of my peregrine friends in the Twin Cities who study. I'm like, you're not going to believe this. This person has a freaking peregrine falcon. And for everyone out there who lives in a place where peregrine falcons perch on wires, I know it happens in some places.
Right.
It's just not something our local Minnesota peregrines do.
Right.
And so I was sending this to people I know in the Midwest. Peregrines, like, look at this! It's a peregrine, an adult perched in Minneapolis in uptown on a wire. And they're like, that bird has no bands. Where is that bird coming from? We need to find out that bird. So I mean, everybody's like really interested. So it's probably like some migratory peregrine. And if you're someone in Minnesota,
but anyway. The point of all these stories is the same: is that there is evidence. I mean, when you anecdotal evidence like the behavior. It was highly unlikely that there was a peregrine perched on a wire. But when you had the evidence, you didn't go, I don't care,
you
accepted the evidence that was presented to you, as opposed to these people who were like, no, this bird is going to be whatever I want it to be. It's, you know, it's a bird, it's an ivory-billed woodpecker, even though you tell me it's a sparrow.
Yeah, and so that's the baffling part about, I mean, it's really exciting that we have so many people that are interested in birds. But, so the person with the black-headed grosbeak, they put this whole thing of like, you've made birding unfun, and I'm going to unjoin this group, and I'm never going to go birdwatch again. Oh, and it's like, Okay, number one, I would argue that you're making birding unfun. Because you're purposely misidentifying a bird.
Sure.
And you're taking people, and it's not like someone that you don't know. It's, people are saying, hey, you know, this person is from the American Birding Association. This person's kind of traveled around.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
Like, if someone doesn't know who I am, yeah, what I do for a living, and says to me, I'm not buying your reason why you're saying this. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, let me explain to you why I think this is.
It's like if you go out to a miniature golf course with a full set of golf clubs and are using a sand wedge to drive, you know, a driver to pound the golf, you know, the golf yeah. ball at 200 miles. You fundamentally do not understand what this hobby is about.
But, yeah, but at the same time, I'm thinking, like, okay, I love bike riding. It is one of my favorite things to do, just short of bird watching. Mm-hmm. It's an immense stress relief to me.
Sure.
Even if I am having a horrible day and I think I don't want to go bike riding, once I go bike riding, I'm so happy and I love it. When I first started bike riding and wasn't very good at it, other bike riders were total dicks to me.
Sure.
I mean, one thing that sticks to me was, like, I was going up a hill one day and I was having trouble, and these two bike riders, who I will point out, were violating the rules by going down this really narrow hill mm-hmm. on a curve side by side and taking up the whole path, yelled at me. He was like, hey, just watch where you're going, bitch. And I was like, you guys are completely in the wrong. You're clearly more mm-hmm. experienced bikers than me. But I was like, screw you. I'm not going to give up bike riding because you were mean to me sure. and said something I didn't understand.
Yeah.
So I would just argue, it's like, yeah, if you're going to give up birding, and you're going to tell the whole group that we're the reason you're giving up birding. We're not the reason you're giving up birding. You just didn't care about birding.
And didn't she join the group? Like,
she joined a different group, and we're not going to say the name of that group because I know the admin. And I was like, oh, please post your gross big photos so everybody can give you the same answer about how they're not black-headed gross.
Yeah, that's the... Yeah, that's the... There's a group that I belong to... and we call that flouncing. When you leave the group, and you don't just leave the group, you make a post about leaving the group and how this group has failed you, and maybe, just maybe, their leaving will make us all take a good hard look at them ourselves. We call that flouncing.
Let's do a PSA here.
Sure.
If you're someone who is part of a group that you just wanted to experiment and see what it was like, or maybe it was something that you liked, if you don't like the group, by all means, leave it.
Yeah,
that is a smart... Because I have done that to several groups. Like, this is not a group for me. Life is too short. I'm getting out of here. Don't tell the group that you're leaving and why and how they're wrong. Because people just make fun of you.
The best... Yeah, the best part is when people are like, who is this person? I have no idea.
Yeah, I've had a couple people do that to the Bird Chick page on Facebook.
Whenever that happens in this particular group, that we always post like a memorial thread where we post like, aww, you know, Sarah McLachlan songs and Baby Please Don't Go and things like that.
No, I don't do that. But I usually delete the post. But it's like, oh, I'm leaving because I liked birding and I didn't know you were going to use profanity. And it's like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
If profanity is your issue, maybe don't be on the internet at all.
All right, what other stories do we have?
Anyway,
by the way, for whatever the dedicatee, we are
Franklin?
Now at 33 minutes, so.
We're going long for you, my friend.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, Bourbon Bastards and Birds. It's a fun blog mm-hmm. to check in with. And I'm pretty sure that guy, I'm not clear on if it's a group blog, but I know that whoever writes for Bourbon Bastards and Birds also writes for 10,000 Birds as Thelonious Drive.
Okay.
Thelonious Jive. Oh gosh, I'm gonna do the really horrible story.
All right.
As long as
we don't end on the horrible story, that's all I ask.
This was a story that confused our former neighbor Zoe.
Okay.
Kelp gulls tear out baby seal eyes so they can feast on their remains when they die.
That's all you really need to know, right?
I know.
There, yeah.
Well, our former neighbor
mm-hmm.
didn't kind of understood the word gull to mean something else, or just completely missed the word gull.
Mm-hmm.
And so she thought kelp was ripping out baby seal eyes.
Interesting. Yeah. Can see that happening.
So anyway, there's a type of gull called a kelp gull. Mm-hmm. I think it would probably be like our lesser...
No, nature is terrible.
Nature is awful. Gulls are awful. Well, gulls are cool. Well, I should say...
No, nature is... There's no animal that's not a bastard.
This is true.
I mean, there's a point in, like... And I know you've never seen this movie, although I... There's value in it. In Grizzly Man, where he talks about the guy, Treadwell, has been, you know, he presents these bears, but he does it in a very friendly, sort of Disneyfied way, where he's like, talk about how amazing they are. Mm-hmm. And then you see his outtakes where the food and the water dries up and the bears eat their young. And he's just freaking out that this has happened. And he's the guy. What's interesting is the guy is basically cursing God for the drought and says, why don't you know? And on camera screams, why don't you make it rain? And then Herzog says, and then the interesting thing is, it rains. but no, nature is, I mean, it's.
Yeah,
it's
you're reinforcing nature. To me what I don't want to watch Grizzly Man.
It's such a fascinating movie. But anyway, but I'm just saying, nature is a bastard.
I had a birder last night, a male birder, trying to convince me to watch, what is it, Wild? Into the Wild? No, what's the one with the chick? Cheryl Strayed.
Wild. You should watch it. It's a great movie.
See, but like all the promos I met, I was like, this woman's grieving her mom, and...
It's not, it's...
She decides to do this really strenuous hike and be ill-prepared, and as a woman...
No, she's not, no, she's over-prepared is her problem.
The thing that, the, okay, so when the book came out, the thing that I read was like, yeah, she was really ill-prepared, and she even like kicks her boot over a cliff at one point, and like, I don't know.
That's the opening of the movie, is like she has the, I mean like, but it completely makes sense in this human moment. It is not this... It's not a woman who just, oh, I'm going to go hike this. It's like, she is, her life, she has destroyed her own life.
And I want to say, I have read other Cheryl Strayed stuff. So yeah. Like, I love Tiny Beautiful Things, or is it A Thousand Beautiful Things? I've read her other books, and I like
but
her writing.
This is,
I've just been terrified to read this.
The movie, I saw the movie, it is really good, and it is, because you, I'm just saying,
I don't care if you give me spoilers.
No, I'm just going to say, you hear these things about chick, it's like, it's not like, oh, I'm going to learn to love again by going on a really expensive trip. This is a woman who has destroyed her life and goes through agony as a form of sort of resetting herself on this trip. And when she does that, when she and that's one of the first scenes in the movie is when she throws away her boots. It makes completely sense in this human moment of like, oh shit, what did I just do?
Because yeah, the blurbs that I had read about originally about the book, it was like, oh, this woman, she's really sad, and her mom died, and she decides to go on this trip, and she's not really a nature person, and like she has the wrong boots, and she even throws her boots away, and it's like, that would piss
no,
me
she
off.
Doesn't,
as someone who goes out in the wild,
yeah, no, she
bear.
Doesn't, but she doesn't throw her boots away and thinks, well, there I go, I'm done. She like tosses her boot in frustration, and it goes off a cliff, and it's like. She completely did not plan for that to happen.
All right. Maybe I need to give this
but
a
But you would,
fair
I think you would, I think you would enjoy this movie.
Because I know nature is terrible.
Yeah.
And gulls are terrible. Gulls are their own worst PR firm. Yeah.
There's a moment I think that you'll appreciate because she brings a camp stove so she can, like, eat.
Okay, that makes sense.
But she brings the wrong gas canister, so she has to eat, like, cold mush for, like, 4 weeks while she's on this trail because she doesn't have the right kind of gas canister and she's in the middle of nowhere. But it's not played for laughs. It's not played, you don't hear, I don't want to wait for my life to be. It's like, she's,
I don't want to wait for my trip, but keep it to be over.
She's like in the middle of nowhere and she has to eat cold mush for weeks because she bought the wrong kind.
See, I thought this was a thing like, I kicked my boots over the edge and now people are going to be nice to me because I'm pretty.
No. She is screwed.
All right. If she's screwed, then I want to watch it.
Yeah,
I want to watch...
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway.
I think I know what kind of movies you like. I think you would like this movie.
All right. You keep trying to say Grizzly Man. You keep bringing up Grizzly Man.
Well,
I
Grizzly
don't want
Man
to watch
is,
Grizzly Man.
Well, Grizzly Man is not a movie about a nature guy. It's a movie... Herzog
it's
approaches
it... a guy
it.
Being really
no,
stupid.
No, it is, but Herzog approaches it as a filmmaker about who this guy is, a filmmaker, and madness, which is, you know, filmmaking and madness are the two things that Herzog is obsessed with.
I get that.
And it's, I mean, and I don't, you know...
I think I'm comfortable with that when I don't know the subject. Sure. So, like, I get that people have madness over nature. Mm-hmm. I just felt like Grizzly... we all knew what was going to happen to this guy.
Right.
Anyway.
Okay. I'm not suggesting you should watch... I think you should, but I'm not going to press you. I think you would like Wild.
Damn it. Why do all these men keep saying I'm going to like Wild?
Well, I don't know.
Well, speaking of which, back
the,
to
when I on the Blaxploitation podcast, I mentioned to Brandy Brown, who I do the Blaxploitation podcast
with, who is
with,
dating a birder's son.
Well, let's not get into that. But I told her, I was like, because we were talking about, you know, black culture and stuff. And I said, have you seen Good Hair? And she says, so many white comedians keep saying to me, oh, you should watch Good Hair, to the point where she said, I want Louis C.K. to do a documentary called Good Teeth and tell, so she can tell white comedians they should watch it.
For the record, I've never told Brandy to watch Good Hair.
It's a really great documentary.
It's a good documentary. I enjoyed, but I completely get, I shouldn't say completely because I'm a different race, but I will say that I understand why she's avoiding it. Yeah. Mm. And that's kind of the same way when someone tells me there's this niche. So H is for Hawk is out.
Is that a murder mystery novel?
I thought it was, but apparently it's not.
Okay.
Because I don't like somebody murder gets mystery.
Murdered by a hawk.
I don't like murder mystery. I don't hate anyone who writes that. That's just not a genre I enjoy.
That's really too bad because I love them.
I know.
I really wish you loved Columbo as much as I do.
I'll give Columbo another shake.
No, I showed you the one episode and I think like you fell asleep during it. So
well, maybe don't do it when I'm in the middle of traveling and doing bird surveys.
Anyway, so you don't like murder mysteries.
It's just not a genre. I feel kind of predictable.
Well, no shit.
Somebody died. We have to figure out how. Hmm. It's got to be the least likely scenario that we think.
Yeah. As opposed to, like... Well, no, I don't... No, I was going to, like, try to do something like usual, but I don't know what you usually listen to. Like, your audiobooks.
And now you're outing me on using audiobooks rather than actually reading.
I don't care if you listen to audiobooks.
If I were blind, would I be reading or would I be listening to audiobooks?
You would be listening, but we've had this discussion already.
I think it is.
But no, I was going to make a joke, and then I realized, like, I don't know what you listen to. Last thing that I heard was some woman screaming about her sister's miscarriage. It was, like, a very quiet book, and then there was a lot of screaming all of a sudden.
I think the last thing I listened to was this thing called Second Life.
Okay.
And it was a whole thing about this woman's sister had been murdered. Mm. And she kind of was trying to half-heartedly figure out who killed her sister because the police weren't doing a good job.
So a murder mystery.
It starts off like you think it's a murder mystery, but it ends up being an internet thriller.
Oh, thank God.
No. It doesn't end with solving anything.
Does she go undercover in a strip club to find out who her...
I don't want to give you spoilers as to what... But I highly recommend Second Life. It doesn't go where you think it's going to go.
All right.
But it's very believable with what can happen in the internet. Sure. And basically, don't have an internet affair.
All right.
If Ashley Madison...
What about if I write a really great book about Julia Childs and then decide to have an affair and make that my second book?
I'd be fine with that.
Okay.
I'm okay with that.
So, H is for Hawk is about...
Apparently, I thought it was some kind of murder mystery. And then I heard that falconry was in it. And then I heard the goshawk was a key...
It turns out it was the goshawk all along.
Well, it always is going to be the goshawk. But anyway, so the more I learned about it, I was like, I don't want to read this because I know some things about falconry.
Sure.
I really love goshawks. Goshawks are arguably my favorite bird. At the end of the day, they're my favorite raptor.
Okay.
I don't want to read some other woman's account of it, especially if she's sad, because she's going to mess up the way I feel about goshawks, and I'm going to argue. But every person I know, like even a writer we know, is like saying, hey, you should read this book.
Okay.
So, H is for Hawk.
Did you enjoy it?
I haven't read it yet. I haven't even listened to it yet. I'm hesitant.
So you just brought it up for...
You brought it up.
No, okay.
So I'm just finishing...
How did we get on this topic?
I'm afraid to read bird books anymore. Oh, okay. This is basically what it is. Because it's like, I mean, there was this halcyon time when I, like, you know, I was reading, like, Season at the Point. I was reading Kingbird Highway. I was reading Tales of a Low-Rent Birder. I can't remember if I'm...
Well, I mean, there's a lot of books where people use birds as metaphors, and you don't like that at all.
It depends. I mean, if it's a birder, then I'm kind of reading it and like, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Kingbird Highway, I'm really sad that Kingbird Highway is not an audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
If I had more money, I would buy the rights to that and either, I don't know if I would hire Ken Kaufman. I love Ken Kaufman.
Sure.
But his voice cracks a lot, so I don't know if you can read that
book. No, you'd need a much younger voice because it's a young man's story.
It is a young man's story. Mm-hmm. It is a young man's story. And I mean, it's... I think Kingbird Highway is a fantastic audiobook because I remember reading it when I worked at the Wild Bird Store. And I still remember passages of it. And I just remember it's like,
oh, I do too.
What the hell am I doing with my life? I'm sitting here working a cash register. I need to like give all this shit up. I'm fucking married. I need to give all this shit up and I need to be living hand to mouth.
I remember him. Yeah, I remember him sitting under a bridge eating like cat food, waiting for a storm to pass. And then there's one point where I think he goes to Alaska, like the furthest point of Alaska. to see a bird, and he's completely lost in the fog, just sort of wandering around, mm-hmm. like, lost. And then
it's an ivory gull, and
the bird walks past him in the fog.
Flies past him in the fog. But, I mean, I read that moment, and I'm like, I could picture it. And I was like, that's amazing.
It was very evocative. That's why I remember it.
That's what I want to do with my life. Yeah. And that's what I've done with my life since. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, but, I mean, in terms of, but, I mean, you get a lot of books from publishers, and a lot of it is, here's how I learned to rediscover life.
I get things from publishers. They're like, hey, you're into birds. Here is a book about some people who are trying to have babies, and at the time they were having babies, there were these red-tailed hawks in New York having babies.
True.
And it's their story about infertility and this hawk. And it's like, no, I don't want to read about what they thought this hawk was doing and why they couldn't have kids. I'm sympathetic to people who can't have children. I'm sorry, you can't have children.
But you just don't want to read a book about that.
I don't want to read people's misinterpretation of hawk behavior and their inability to have children.
Right.
I don't want to read about people's misinterpretation of bird behavior. I think if you don't know about birds and you want to read about that,
well, that's part of the reason why you shouldn't watch Grizzly Man is, but it's not.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's like this dude is blatantly misinterpreting.
But the movie recognizes. Behavior. I mean, but Herzog, in particular, recognizes that this man is that he has that. Sort of outsider's perspective that this man is using these bears to heal some whatever, and it doesn't address that there is something that is broken within him that being around these bears heals him, but at the same time it's a form of madness that is actually harming the bears as animals. And Herzog completely does not buy. Herzog actually has a really great quote in there that he says, looking into the eyes of the bears, I don't see any wisdom or, you know, whatever. I only see a half-bored interest in food. He has no sympathy. So you're getting this guy who is completely buying into this mystical view of nature versus this guy who has no, you know, he has no mysticism in him for nature at all. But they also find, but that he finds this common ground in the filmmaking process.
Okay, so this is fascinating because I frequently find walking in nature is healing. Mm-hmm. I find I shouldn't say bird watching is healing, but I can find an escape no matter what. Crap bullshit is happening in my day, no matter how horrible life is, I can go walk somewhere where I know birds are, watch birds, digiscope them, and in that moment I'm not thinking about all the terrible things that are going on.
Okay.
And but at the same time, the story that we tried to bring up, the horrible story about kelp gulls tear out baby seal eyes so they can eat the eyes because it's a source of nutrition. Mm-hmm. That seal is going to die a slow and painful death of starvation because it can't see. And I'm sure it was painful that its eyes were ripped out.
Sure.
Birds represent many things to me. At the end of the day, bird resiliency is fascinating to me. So, like, when birds are paired up, a mate gets killed, they still survive.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the rare cases where there's a wood duck that is in my local patch that we watch. The female wood duck, for whatever reason, said, fuck off, you're not part of our group. That wood duck is still alive. I saw it today.
Mm.
And so, like, birds have an ability to survive, and that resiliency is fascinating to me. And it's, you know,
sure.
They don't have the long lamentation period that we would have as an emotionally cognizant human being. And so maybe it's because I appreciate birds and I fascinate birds, but I keep it at a distance. I admire birds, but I know every bird has a dark side and can be a complete and total asshole. Sure. And I think, I don't know, and I think that's why I don't want to watch Grizzly Man. It's like, I know grizzlies.
I think it's going to make you angry, but I don't think you're going to walk out of that movie saying, oh, this was, you know, the perfect. I think it's going to make, you know.
I don't want to watch someone being purposely stupid with wildlife.
Yeah. That's what he does, but I think it's a more, I don't know.
I have these conflicts with
I think
other...
you're going to be angry if you watch it.
Yeah, I don't want to be angry.
Yeah.
I have conflicts with a lot of things, like Jane Goodall.
Mm-hmm.
Love quite a bit of her writing. Love a lot of the research that she gave us. Don't always agree with what Jane Goodall does.
True.
All
right. Let's move on to something happier.
Yeah, let's not talk about... Okay, anyway, I've told you the article. I don't even know if I'm going to necessarily link to it. You could easily Google this. Seagulls have their own bad press.
Are you trying to tell me they read tabloids?
No, and, it's something fascinating sheets? That I've noticed, like, when I link to a seagull story, and oftentimes, like, when... Oh, God, I'm saying seagull. I must be drunk. Mm-hmm. When I link to a story about gulls, mm-hmm. because it's so horrible, sometimes I'll just make kind of an offhanded joke, because that is my defense mechanism.
Sure.
And inevitably, British people I know are like, oh, you're just contributing to the negative thing, because apparently in the UK... killing gulls is a thing now, and like you can get depredation permits, and it's kind of like the whole badger call thing over there, and it's like I'm like, yo, British people, you need to have more of a sense of humor about this. But over there, gulls are being persecuted.
Well, they can't persecute the Irish anymore, so they have to move it somewhere else.
Ooh, I don't know if that's cool for us to say, man. You need to backpedal on that.
I don't think the British were really bastards to the Irish, so I don't think that I don't think I need to apologize to anybody.
All right, I need to find a better story to end on. Oh, here we go. 5 mystery birds among John James.
Again, we're talking about mysteries here.
Nobody killed anything. So apparently, there are a few birds among Audubon, John James Audubon, the guy who had a
film
in America. Hey, we're not talking about the so much hotter Alexander Wilson. We have an Alexander Wilson on our wall because we found it framed in our basement. Because
their names sound nothing alike. I would never make that mistake.
Wilson was before Audubon. Wilson was trying to sell his field guide beforehand, and he inadvertently sold it in a shop in Kentucky, which ended up being like a brother-in-law and John James Audubon, and the brother-in-law said in French to Audubon, oh, I think you
could. So he got on the phone and said,
and you could also sell this Alexander Wilson.
So he got on the phone and said, John, it's your cousin Marvin. Marvin Audubon. You know that book you've been looking for? Well, take a look at this.
Do that in a French accent. That's exactly what happened.
That's the history of it. Okay.
Now, Alexander Wilson was this very tortured and dark poet
who
was doing everything scientifically in profiles. And what I absolutely love about the grouse illustration that we have is that apparently there is speculation, and quite frankly, you can hold them side by side, that Audubon basically took that and traced his version of a grouse and just flipped it. Like, when you look at him, it's like, oh shit, he totally traced that. Anyway, the
story we're actually talking about.
Alexander Wilson. He's on my list of 5. Okay. With Scott Wydenzel. Everyone wants
except
to know.
He's been dead for about 100 years.
That's the point of the list of 5. It doesn't matter.
Let's move on, shall we?
Look, the story we're actually talking about. Look, if the doctor shows up, I'm going back to when Alexander Wilson was
alive. The story we were actually talking
bang
about.
Alexander Wilson.
The story we were actually talking about.
Audubon.
Yes.
So there are some birds in his magnum opus that cannot be identified today.
Were they
hybrids? Were they weird color morphs? Were they birds that have gone extinct and we don't know?
Sure.
Audubon has some colorful names for some of them. Maybe he just made some birds up.
That would be an interesting move for 3 birds in a...
5
birds in a field guide that he just decided to make some birds up.
But, I mean, who knows if he has a concept of future that we have today. There was no internet so that everything would be forever. Also, by the time Audubon was alive, North America was this vast thing that, you know, it wasn't the point where it's like, hey, you know what, the frontier is gone.
Well, no, I mean, but that would be such a strange thing to do for 5. How many plates were in this guide?
I don't know how many plates.
But that would be a strange thing to do, because, I mean, it wasn't like he would... It's like you see these old things where people are, you know, describing unicorns, which are probably supposed to be rhinoceroses. And it's just like, oh, I'm going to make up these fantastical creatures for you. But to have, like... Because it was... Was it on the cover? Was it...
No, they're just in there. One is the carbonated swamp warbler.
Okay. Well, I mean, some of these things that, you know, may have been described to him, or maybe now they're extinct. But that would be a strange thing to make up 5 of them, or to realize that he just got the painting completely wrong and just made something up.
Writers have suggested that the carbonated swamp warbler may have been painted inaccurately from memory to replace an earlier painting that had been destroyed by rats.
Oh. I can see that.
Anyway, so you can read that article if you wish. All right.
Do we have anything else?
I have an article that, or a commercial that looks like it's about erectile dysfunction, but it is really about nature.
Same thing.
So, not everybody has erectile dysfunction in
not
nature.
Everybody has nature.
Oh.
Not everyone has nature in their erectile dysfunction. I don't even know
nature
what that means.
Nature lasts longer than 4 hours.
Consult. If your wife goes bird watching for more than 4 hours, consult a psychiatrist.
Hey, it's not your wife. It could be you should say spouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should, because, like, you know, there are gay birders out there. And there are...
All birders are insane.
All birders are insane.
All right.
How long is the podcast going? Has this gone long enough for Franklin?
We are just creeping up on 56 minutes here, so I think now's a good time to wrap it up.
All right, Mr. Clemens, this is totally for you.
There you go.
We went this long for you.
This podcast has lasted longer than 55 minutes, so consult your physician.
Woohoo!
All right, so this is Bird Chick Podcast number 191. If you want to talk to Sharon, she is on Twitter at Bird Chick. You can email her at Sharon@birdchick.com, or you can find her on the Faces Books. This is Bill Seiler, and we'll be back later. Bye-bye.